Okay, so we're holding on Chof Aleph Amud Beis, 7 lines from the bottom.
Thank you.
We learned yesterday about that Shlomo HaMelech was the one who made the Takana of Eruvin and Netilas Yadayim. So that leads us into a little more Gadda about what Shlomo HaMelech accomplished, and then continuing with a little more Gadda about what we had about the importance of Torah and mitzvahs. We talked about the importance of Divrei Sofrim in particular. So the Gemara says, Amar Hamnuna, my dichtiv vaydabish shloshes alafim moshal vayhi shiroi chamisha va'olaf. The Pasuk says about Shlomo that he spoke 3,000 mesholim, 3,000 analogies or parables or whatever, and his songs were 1,005. So that means that teaches us that for each thing in Torah, for each din in Torah, Shlomo HaMelech gave 3,000 mesholim to explain it. Rashi explains moshol as tam, in which case it comes out basically the same as tam as taimim that we're going to learn by the next one. Marshall says that actually no, it means moshol in the simple sense, as in a moshol, a parable to be able to explain what it says in the Torah by giving an analogy between it and something else. There's a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea that Shlomo's understanding of Torah and of the world in general was so far beyond the average person, and he wanted to make sure that the Torah is accessible and understandable even by a person far lower than him. He would have to say a mashal for what he's teaching, and then even the mashal itself would go over the heads of many people, so you have to go a second mashal to explain the first marshal, and then a third marshal to explain the second, and so forth. You had to step it down 3,000 times before it got to the point where everybody, where even the lowliest person, could understand it. So that's as far as the 3,000 mashalim. And then for each thing taught by the Sofrim, which means dinim dirabanan, it includes things that we learn with the Yud Gil Midas Shatron Adreshes Behem, etc. For each one of them, he would give 1,005 reasons why the halacha should be that way, or what the Chachamim meant by what they're saying, or whatever. So in other words, he put a lot of effort into making the Torah. No. When you have things in the Gemara, sometimes are guzmais. This is quoting from a pasuk. The fact is the Mefarshim have many other ways of understanding this. There's another explanation actually from another medrash, I think, that the 3,000 moshel refers to the three parts of Mishle and the 1,005 songs, the 1,005 taimim refer to something else. But all Gemara over here is taking it in the sense of actually 3,000 and actually 1,005, and especially 1,005 is not even a round number. But Pashtos, it means it's meant to be exact. Shlomo HaMelech was hachacham. He was the wisest of all people, so we can assume that he put a lot of effort into teaching Torah and making it as clear and accessible to people as possible. So in this connection, Dorash Rava, my dichtiv, we have a pasuk near the end of Kehelas. The Yosef Shahoya Kehelas Kochem, besides, even more than the fact that Kehelas was wise, Kehelas is one of the names of Shlomo HaMelech, Oid Liman Das Asa'am, he also taught the people understanding, the Izain V'chikir, and he Izain and checked into it. Izain literally means, like, he delved into it to understand it, Meloshin Oizen, like he made sure that people would be able to hear and understand it. The Gemara in a second is going to take the word Izain in a different sense. Tikin Mesholim Harbe, and he set up many Mesholim. So what is this? What do each of these phrases mean? Lima das esa'am, when it says he taught the people understanding, means the agmere b'simone taimim. He taught them with simonim of the trup. Meaning, Rashi explains, like this you have, the trup themselves are halacha l'moshe m'sinai, at least in Mikra. He set up a mesora and simonim in order that those are remembered and not forgotten. For example, you might have had before him, you might not have had names for the trup, and he gave them names, or he might have given different simonim, like you have even nowadays in books of the mesora and in Minchas Shai and in other such svarim. That give ways to remember what the trup or what the trup should be on a certain word. So he arranged things of that. And also Rashi says also on the Mishnah. Also when they're learning Torah Shabbat Peh, he set up that like this, they had a semi-standardized wording of how to learn certain halachas. So he set up a trup for that as well. In fact, you can find some, there are some manuscripts of Mishnayos and even one printed edition that have them with some trup. Because after all, I mean, the trups serve a number of purposes. They divide things up in syntax. They're like punctuation marks, but they also make us be able to sing them. So like this, and singing helps you remember it better. So like this, he would do that with the Mikra and with the Mishnah in order that people can remember it better. And he explained each thing with something that's similar to it, again, by making an analogy. The izain v'chiker, it says that he izain and he delved into it. Tikkun mishalom harbi, he set up many mishalom. So what's that word izain? Amar ula, amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer actually. But tchila ha'isa Torah domek l'kfifa she'en la'oznayim. Originally the Torah was like a basket that has no handles. The word oznayim literally means ears, but a lot of times in Gemara terminology, oznayim means the handles of something. So this basket of the Torah had no handles. Until Shlomo came and made handles. We said yesterday that that Shlomo made the takanas of Eruvin and Yadayim, that you have to make an Eruv Chatzeres and that you have to wash your hands before you eat Kodshim. Rashi adds another one. He's also the one who made the takana, who made the Gzera, that you're not allowed to marry Shnios, second degree relatives. We have those 20 or so relatives that you're not allowed to marry Apitora, and then Shlomo added other ones, which are Midrabanan. So the idea is, with all of that, he made the Torah. Now it's easier to grasp a hold of the Torah and hold on to it like a basket that has handles. In other words, before that, it was very easy to be over on things of Torah. Like this, these takanas of his made it that now it's much easier to hold on tight to the Torah and not accidentally drop it and not accidentally be over on an issu by making these takanas and these zeris. So now the Gemara is going to darsh. So now we're going to darsh in another pasuk from Shir HaShirim, which is also relevant to this about the details of Torah. The pasuk says Kvutzos of Taltalim. You have a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, one of the pasukim where the girl is praising the man, which means the Jewish people are praising Hashem, and you have a pasuk over there Kvutzos of Taltalim Shchores Ka'orev. Literally, it means the locks of his hair are curly. Black like a raven. So in a simple meaning, it means, you know, it's a nice thing for a man that he has jet black hair like that in rings and curls. So the Gemara darshens it. What is Kvutzos of Taltalim? Omer of Chista, Omer Ma'opa, Melamed Sheyesh Lidrash, Al Kol Koitz V'Koitz, Tilei Tilim Shel Halachas. This teaches us that on every koitz, on every thorn, meaning the tagim in the Torah, you can darshen on it mounds upon mounds of halachas. So Kvutzos of Meloshin Koitz, and Taltalim, Meloshin Tail, Meloshin Tilei Tilim, piles upon piles. As we know, famously, from the story in Menachos, that Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu that Rabbi Akiva did exactly that he would darshen based on the koitzim, based on the tagim, on the letters, he would darish in many, many halachas from them. And when the pasuk continues, shchores ka'orev, black like a raven, that means the mi atam moitzan, who are you going to find knowledge of those piles and piles of knowledge of Torah on? What kind of person are you going to find it by? B'misha mashk mamarev alein l'beis medrash, somebody who gets up early to go to the Bais Medrash and stays late in the Bais Medrash. In which case, in other words, we're saying that Shchoros is Meloshin Shachris and Ka'orev Meloshin Arvis. So a person who makes sure to be Shachris for Arvis in the Bais Medrash, that's the kind of person who is going to be Zoicha to understand, to learn and to understand these deep Taimei Torah, these Tilei Tilim Shel Halachas, these piles and piles of Halachas. Rabbi gives a different explanation of Shchoros Ka'orev. It means B'misha Mashchuponav Alehen Ka'orev. It means, who do you find knowledge of these halachas and these details of Torah on? Somebody who makes his face black over them like a raven. A raven is, we know in many places, is a cruel bird. Yeah, we say in every day in davening, Livnei Orev Asher Yikro, where the mother raven, the parent ravens, do not have rachmanos on their children, and Hashem arranges that there should be gnats and flies and whatever that fly into their mouths to feed them. So therefore, so always in Shas, a raven is a symbol of being cruel. So, actually, we're not up to that over here yet. What we're saying is, though, also the point is, a raven is black. So a person who blackens his face over Torah like a raven, in other words, a person who He's not worried about his own physical comfort. He may not get to sleep very much. He may not get to eat very much, but he's going to learn Torah. So that's the kind of person, Shchoras Ka'orav, where he makes himself black and unattractive like a raven. He's the kind where you're going to have these Kvutzos of Tartalim, where he's going to have the ability to learn these piles and piles of halachas that you learn from the Tanya. Rava Amar v'Misha Mesim Atzmai Achzori Al Bonav Ka'orav. Here's where we get to the cruelty. So Rava says it means the person who acts as though he's cruel to his family and to his children and his household like a raven. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, not allowed to be cruel al pi Torah. It means, in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, it means like this: you could have a person figure as I have to provide my family with all kinds of luxuries and extra good food and everything. Well, then he's going to have to work hard in order to do that. Then he's not going to have enough time to learn Torah in the depth that we're talking about over here. Whereas a person who acts as though he's achzori, he's obviously not achzori. He's obviously not actually cruel to them, but he acts in a certain sense as if he is. Saying, in other words, that I'm relying on Hashem, that he'll provide them more beyond the basic necessities. I'll provide for them the basic necessities, and the rest I'm leaving up to Hashem. That's the kind of person that is now Zoycha to be able to learn the deeper understanding of the Torah. As we have the example where Rav Adab Amasna was going to the yeshiva, so his wife says to him, what am I going to do with your children? How are we going to support them? So he says to her, Mishlimu Kurmi Ba'agma, have all the Kurmi in the I'll explain in a second what Kurmi are, have all the Kurmi in the meadows gone. In other words, don't worry about it. You'll have what to feed them. Kurmi Rashi says two explanations. One is it means vegetables in general. So in other words, you can go and pick wild vegetables and they'll have what to eat. The other explanation, Rashi says Kurmi is a specific kind of plant where you have the inside of it. When you harvest this plant, it's a wild plant. Inside of the stalk of it, you can find something like flour. It's something soft which you can grind up into a kind of flour, and then you're able to make bread out of it. So it's acorns, maybe it's cattails. I don't know, whatever it is, some kind of plant. There is the possibility of living off of that. It's nutritious and it's whatever. So therefore, said Adab Amasna is telling his wife, in other words, in short, that you don't have to worry about that we're not gonna have enough food for our children. Hashem provided in the natural world enough for us to be able to live off of, and therefore I can go and learn in the yeshiva. So that's the kind of thing we're describing superficially. You would think such a person is achzori ka'orav, he's being cruel. Or, you know, you'd say to such a person as many people do say, you know, what kind of you're sitting and bench kvetching all day. And what's going to be with your family? But the Gemara is saying over here that actually it's a great mila. He's doing a great thing.
Doesn't the Rambam say that the highest level of a person is to work and to learn Torah?
The Rambam doesn't say it's the highest level. The Rambam does talk about that a person should not say I'm learning Torah and the Tzibur is going to support me. But here we're talking about Rav Adab Amasna is not saying the Tzibur is going to support you. He's saying we'll make do. You'll eat less. You'll eat less. You'll eat cheaper food than you otherwise would. You'll be doicha kasatzmai pasma melach toichel maimam asura tishke, like it says in Pirkei Avos. But not the Rambam is talking about over there. If the choices are between relying on Tzibur for support versus that the Talmud Chacham himself should work, then yes, he should work. Which, by the way, you should know that many Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that. I mean, they say maybe in principle that's true. You're not supposed to live and profit off the Torah. But the fact of the matter is, in many times, in many places, if you did that, there would be very few Talmud Chacham around because it's, you know, times are hard, and people have to have some way of supporting themselves. So there is justification for example, the way they work in Kolalim, where people are actually paid a stipend and sit and learn Torah. But that's another discussion, which we'll get into another time. But the point is, over here, we're not even talking about that. Here we're talking about, he's saying there is what for ourselves to be able to support ourselves with, he says to his wife, to be able to support the family without having to need the tzibur or without me having to work and me be able to learn Torah full time. All right. Onward. Talking about schar v'onesh for mitzvahs, the pasuk says at the end of Parshas Vaschanan, u'mishalom l'sonav al ponav l'ha'avidoi, Hashem pays back his enemies el ponav to his face l'ha'avidoi in order to destroy him. In other words, that Hashem gives the Rishoyim their schar in this world and then they get punished in Olam Haba. What's the expression el ponav? So on the face of it, it means in the presence of the Rosha. In other words, while the Rosha is alive. But the Gemara is understanding it differently. Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Il Mole Mikra Kosov Yechal Omre. If the Pasuk hadn't expressed it like this, it would be impossible for us to say because it sounds very disrespectful. Kavyachol, the way Hashem runs it now when it comes to the Shoyim, Ka'odim Shem Nose Masu Yaponov, like a person who's carrying a heavy burden in front of his face and he wants to get rid of it, and he wants to throw it away. In other words, the same way. In other words, like Hashem, so to speak, is like carrying a burden he has to pay back to the Shoyim in this world in order for them to have the fully what they deserve. And Abba, so it's like a burden that Hashem wants to get rid of. That's El Panav. And the pasuk, that same pasuk continues, Lo Ya'acher L'Soinoi. The pasuk continues that Hashem will not delay paying back his enemies. Amar Rab Ila, so Rab Ila says, you see an implication from that. L'Soinov Hu D'Lo Ya'acher, Avol Ya'acher L'Tzadikim Gmurim. Hashem will not delay paying back the Rishayim and will give them the reward for the little mitzvahs they did in this world in order that they get fully what they have in Elam Haba. That implies, though, that Hashem does delay the reward for Tzadikim Gmurim, because they only get it fully in Elam Haba. V'hainu d'amar Rabbi Shurban Levi, my dichtiv, asher anochim etzavcha hayom la'asosam. What does the pasuk mean when it says the next pasuk there, it's the last pasuk of Parashas Vaschanan, that keep the mitzvahs which I am giving you today to do them? That implies hayom la'asosam v'loy l'macha la'asosam. Today, when you're in this world, and in the time before Mashiach, is the time to be doing mitzvahs. But not l'macha, after 120, there's no more doing mitzvahs. After Mashiach comes, the mitzvahs that we're going to do then are not going to compare in any way to the ones that we do now. We're going to miss the days of Golos, as it says in Hayom Yom, right? Hayom La'asosam L'macha L'kavos Chorim. And it also means today, when you're in this world, is the time to be doing mitzvahs, and L'macha, after 120, and after Mashiach comes, is the time to receive their reward. So that's what it means, in other words. So we're saying that Hashem doesn't delay paying back the Rishoyim in this world, but Hashem does delay paying back the Tzadikim, because they only get their schar in Olam Haba. There is actually a sicha. There's a sicha, I think, in Chelek Choftes, where the Rebbe talks about, so how does that fit with the din? We had in last week's parish of Yom Titin Schora, you have to pay the worker on the day he finished the job, so how is Hashem delaying the payment? And the Rebbe goes through a couple of possible explanations and explains the problems with all of them, and he says ultimately the idea is because all of us collectively are involved in an effort. It's not just for the individual person. We're talking collectively. All of us have the job of Avodah Sabirurim. So until Mashiach comes, that collective job throughout all the generations of the Jewish people is not complete, and therefore the real schar is reserved only for when the job is complete, which is when Mashiach comes. The Rebbe, I think, also talks about that idea that, like, therefore Hashem treats us more as like partners in the work. Yeah, I think there is that also. Yeah. Omer of Chagavi Temer of Shmuel Manachmeni, my dichtiv. Erech Apayim, another thing in this connection, what does it mean when we describe Hashem in the Yud Gimel Midas Harachmim as slow, as patient of Apayim? Apayim literally means face. I mean, Apayim actually means face and it means nose. So Rashi explains in a bunch of places that anger is associated with the nose, because like when a person is angry, like their nostrils flare. So therefore, so Erech Apayim literally means that Hashem is patient with the nose, meaning in other words that Hashem is patient and doesn't pay back the Rishoyim right away. But Apayim also means the face. Yeah, like Erech Anpin and Zer Anpin and whatever. So the question is, why Apayim in the plural? Erech Afni Barile, it should be Erech Af in the singular. Ela, Erech Apayim Tzadikim, Erech Apayim Lo Rishoyim. It means that that Hashem is patient. It means that Hashem is patient with the tzaddikim and also with the rishoyim. So that means, you know, with patient with the tzaddikim, as we said, that he waits until la'asid lava to pay them back, and the rishoyim, that Hashem is patient with them, that Hashem also delays their punishment until olam haba. Which is also, now Tosfos says this is also, now how is that a good midah then? And doesn't that mean that Hashem is going to give them their full punishment in Olam Haba? Tosfos says, on the other hand, it's a good thing for them because it means it gives them more time to do tshuva. Like this, if Hashem punished them right there on the spot, they would never be able to do tshuva for their averus. So Hashem is patient with them and gives them a time. They live long in the world, etc. And that way they have a chance to do tshuva. So therefore, those are both midahs of Rachmim and Hashem. You know, you have, usually we think of Erech Apayim as one Midah, but I think in the Midas HaRachmim that we have in Tashlich, I think Erech and Apayim are counted, at least in one of the things over there, I think are counted as two separate Midas. That would be based on our Gemara over here.
Which one is
We were saying that there's two different middos involved, one for the tzaddikim and one for the rishayim. Getting back to the matter of pasei berois, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Amad Beis Sasayim Hula, Rabbi Yehuda had said that the area of the pasim can be up to Beis Sasayim. Now, there's two ways of understanding that. Rabbi Yehuda, it could mean that the whole area that's enclosed is no more than Beis Sasayim. It could, well, it could also mean that the burr itself, that the well itself, is Beis Sasayim in size. So what is it? Rabbi Yehuda Amad Beis Sasayim Hula. Does Rabbi Yehuda mean Beis Sasayim, including the burr and the pasim around it? The total enclosed area can be no more than Beis Sasayim, which, as we've said before, is 5,000 square amas. And that's, in other words, given we said before that the minimum distance the pasim can be from the well would be 2 amas in each direction. So that would mean, in other words, so if we're talking about a square area, so Beis Sasayim is about 70, is a little more than 70 by 70 amas, 70 and two-thirds by 70 and two-thirds. So then it would mean the maximum size burr that we could enclose would be one that would be 66, about 66 by 66 amas. Because then you have 66 in the middle, 2 on this side, 2 on that side, makes you 70, and then you still good. 2 on each side, right. Right. So let's see. So Beis Sasayim, again, is 5,000, so it's 70 by 70 amas. In terms of feet, 70 amas is about, according to Rabbi Chaim, no, it's about 110 feet. 105, 110 feet. 70 is maybe about that width, I would say, maybe. I'm not sure. This shul is maybe the length. I don't know. I guess you could think of it this way. The short blocks in Crown Heights are about 250 feet. So you're talking the width of a little less than half of a block would be one side of a Beis Sasayim, let's say. Yeah, let's vaguely. Well, not here because we're on the other side of Montgomery. But in other words, starting from let's say the corner of the building over there, maybe like going until the end of the building would be approximately one side of a Beis Sasayim. I don't know. I'll see if I can find tomorrow something better too. Yeah, you're right. And Hanami Beis Sasayim is only 5,000 square amas. It's not that big after all. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so if we say that, then it means the maximum size a burr can be would be 66 and two-thirds amas, and then once you have the 2 amas on each side of it, then you're up to 70 and two-thirds. For the behemoth to be able to have its head and most of its body in, right? Or maybe it'll be hard to mean the burr all by itself can be Beis Sasayim. And then, in other words, when you have the area of the 2 amas on each side of it, you end up with an enclosure larger than Beis Sasayim. The point of the question is, Adam Noisin Eina Baboroi. Now, the reason why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want you to do more than Beis Sasayim is because it's not considered an area that's hukas ladira. It's not an area that's enclosed for living purposes. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to be concerned that if the area with the pasim is too large, then even if we argue this one is hukas ladira, you're going to say though it's going to be easily confused with another kind, with a kairpif, for example, which we're going to learn later on in the perek, where you're limited to Beis Sasayim, and therefore he's not going to allow more than that. So the question is now, when a person looks at this burr with the pasim around it, what is he mainly focusing on? Adam noisin eina baboda. Do we say the person mainly focuses on the burr, and therefore he looks at it, the burr itself is Beis Sasayim in size, and therefore, mentally, to him, this area within the pasim is only the size of Beis Sasayim. It's really larger, because you really have the extra 2 amas on each side, but mentally, he doesn't think about that. Therefore, we wouldn't have to be gozer that he might end up carrying more than Beis Sasayim in a karpif, where a karpif is an enclosed area, for example, an area outside the city, where you keep wood or whatever, where there definitely you're limited to Beis Sasayim. So Rabbi Yehuda is not going to be concerned. Like this, if the well itself, the surface area of the well itself is Beis Sasayim, and you have the extra 2 amas on each side of it, so it's much larger, the total area now is much larger than Beis Sasayim, Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to say, is not going to be concerned that then you're going to think that in general you're allowed to carry in an enclosed area that's more than Beis Sasayim. We're not worried about that because mentally you're not going to think of this as a place more than Beis Sasayim. You're going to think of this as a place that includes a well which is Beis Sasayim. and therefore there would be no problem. Or maybe we would say the person tends to think more in terms of the mechitza. So now it's a mechitza that's larger than an area based asayim. The gazrin and duma osi leichlofa yosim based asayim. And therefore we might have to make a gzera because the person is going to now think, if I'm allowed to carry within these passive eros, where again, you've got a well which itself is based on size, 70 and 2/3 on each side in the middle of it, and 2 amas on each side. So now you have an enclosure of 74 by 74 amas, and therefore he's going to think that in the future that I can carry in any enclosure that's 74 by 74 amas, 74 and 2/3, whatever, even if there's no bar, right, which would be wrong, because that's more than based on size. So, Tashma, and we learn in a braisa, kamahen makuravin, how close can the pasim be to the well? Kedei roshav ruba shopara, it has to be, again, it has to be no more than 2 amas in order to allow for the head and the body and most of the body of the cow to be inside. But kamahen merochokin, how far away can they be from the bur? Afilu kurayim, it could even be a base kur or a place of 2 kurim. A kur is 30 sa, so a base kur would be 15 times the size of base sasayim. Kurayim is 2 kur, so therefore it would be 30 times the size of a base sasayim, so it would be a far larger area. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, based asayim mutter, yosim based asayim also. Rabbi Yehuda says no, only up to based asayim is mutter, not more than that. Rulayla Rabbi Yehuda. So now they said to Rabbi Yehuda, I ata moda b'dir v'sahar u'mukta v'chotzer. Don't you agree when it comes to a deer, which is a temporary pen that you put up for animals, as we learned in the Mishnah that the idea is you want the animals to fertilize an area of the field, so you put up a temporary pen so that their droppings will fertilize it. The sahar, or more permanent kind of enclosure that you have for the animals that belong to the people in the city, or mukta, an area where you use it for drying fruit, or for drying wood or whatever, it's usually someplace outside the city. The chotzer or chotzer, all those things are very commonly used. All those things are mutter. Afilu beis chameshes korim beis aseres korim shemutter. Where there you're allowed, even if it's 5 kor or 10 kor, which is far larger than beis sasayim. And the reason is because all of those are hukaf ladira. All of those are enclosed for living purposes. Now, you don't actually live in those places, but you use, we learned the other day, Rashi had said, one explanation, you use them on a constant basis. You're always going in and out of them. So therefore, that's enough to make it hukaf ladira. We learned over there, we had other Rishonim who learned a little differently. Maybe you have to have a person stays over there overnight. So you have in the deer and the sahar, sometimes the shepherd stays with them. In the case of the mukta, you have a watchman over there to guard the stuff so it doesn't get stolen. Whatever. The point of the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is brought like Rashi that it's good enough if you have a person regularly goes in and out of the place, even if it's not necessarily that he actually lives there. Anyway, the point is the Chachamim are saying to Yehuda, that you see by those kinds of enclosures that you're allowed to carry in them even if they're much more than base asayim, why should the pasib erois be any different? The same thing, you're going in and out of there all the time. And we learned yesterday the water has to be fresh water so it's suitable for people to drink. So people, so it can be considered a dira just like the other ones. That's the answer. Amalahem, Zumachitza, Ve'ela Pasim. Rabbi Yehuda answers them. The difference is that the deer or sahar, etc., have real mechitzas. So therefore, I agree that therefore, as long as you have good mechitzas, plus the fact that it's the deer, then good, you can carry in it no matter how large it is. Ve'ela Pasim, over here, all we have is Pasim. All we have is these L-shaped things at the corners, which are only the semblance of mechitzas. That's not enough to make it, it's fine. You're right. In theory, it should be the same. That as long as it's a dira, it should be fine. But it's more easily confused with an open area, and therefore I'm not going to allow it. Okay, continues the braisa. Rab Shimon ben Elazar, I'm a bur base sasayim, a base sasayim mutter. If the bur itself is base sasayim in size, then it's mutter. Now, base sasayim, a base sasayim sounds like it means, base sasayim, a base sasayim sounds like it means 2 by 2, which would be an area of 4 sa, which would be double the amount we've been talking about until now. So, in fact, the Rashba brings from the Raiva that he explains our Gemara like that. But the Rashba says, I don't like that. The Gemara is going to soon ask that there doesn't seem to be a practical difference, a practical argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Elazar, and the Gemara is going to explain how there is. If it was a difference that Rabbi Yehuda only allows it up to 2 sa' and Rabbi Shimon Elazar allows it up to 4 sa', then the Gemara didn't need to ask anything. So, base sasayim, a base sasayim just means, in other words, it's a square whose total area is base sasayim. So if the well is like that, then mutter, then it's mutter to set up the pasim. Then all you have to do, all you have to do then is you have to put the pasim no more than two amas away from the well. In other words, once the well itself is based on Sayim, then you have to put the pasim no more than 2 amas away in order to enclose as little area as possible because the well itself is based on Sayim. By the way, the Ritva explains over here a Svara, if we, besides what we said before in the Gemara, about that the person focuses mainly on the burr, or the person focuses mainly on the mechitzas, you can look at it like this. If the burr itself is based on sayim, you can take the view. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, I could have put the pasim directly around the well, and that would be good enough for me. The chachamim are requiring me to put them 2 amas away from the well. You can't sort of penalize me and say that I can't do that because the chachamim are requiring me to put it 2 amas away. So therefore, that's one reason that Rabbi Yehuda might say that it's good enough to do it that way. Anyway, so over here, similarly, Rabbi Shimon Elazar is saying that that even the bur itself can be based sasayim, and then you just have to have the pasim no more than 2 amas away. So the point is, so ha midka amar Rabbi Shimon Elazar bur v'loy pasim. So obviously, Rabbi Shimon Elazar is clearly saying that it's mutter, even if the burr itself is based on sayim in size, and therefore that you can now put the pasim 2 amas away from it, and now you have an area 74 by 74 amas, and it's still good. Now, he has to be arguing with Rabbi Yehuda on something, otherwise there's no reason to mention them separately. Miklal Rabbi Yehuda burr pasim kamar. Obviously, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, when he says based on sayim, must mean the area of the pit plus the pasim. In other words, the whole area that's enclosed by the pasim can't be more than 70 2/3 by 70 2/3. But the Gemara says, Veloyi, that's not correct. Actually, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Elazar might agree on that point. Rabbi Yehuda, bur v'lay pasim kamar. No, Rabbi Yehuda can mean the bur itself cannot be bigger than base sasayim. So the question is, Yehochi hainu de Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Then in that case, he's saying exactly the same thing as Rabbi Shimon Elazar. And the answer is, Arich v'kotin, the answer is ikabinayo arich v'kotin. The machlokas between them would be, what if the burr is not square? What if it's rectangular? Now, like this, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, who uses the expression base sasayim, a base sasayim, meaning it has to be square. Again, according to the Raivid, it would mean 2 by 2. According to the Rashba and everybody else, it just means that it's a square whose total area is base sasayim. So each side of it is no more than 70 2/3 amas. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda didn't mention anything about base sasayim, a base sasayim. He just mentioned base sasayim mutter. The original base sasayim, where do we learn the whole concept of base sasayim for? We learn it from the chotzer of the Mishkan. We're going to learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that the chotzer of the Mishkan was 50 by 100 amas, and we learn from that the concept of base sasayim. The chotzer of the Mishkan wasn't square, it was rectangular. It was 100 by 50 amas. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda could well be saying that even if the burr is 100 by 50, then you can enclose it with pasim, and you still have yourself an area. Same idea. In other words, you measure the 2 sides of it, and then you multiply. The same way as if it's square, you measure the sides of 70 2/3 and 70 2/3, and you multiply that together, and you get about 5,000. The same way, if it's 100 by 50, 100 times 50 is 5,000 square amas. Right. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say that's still fine to enclose with pasim. So that would be the argument between him and Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So we could say, in other words, both of them agree that it's fine as long as the burr itself is up to base sasayim, but Rabbi Shimon Elazar would allow it at that point only if the burr is square, and Rabbi Yehuda would allow it even if the burr is rectangular. Okay. Continues the Braisa. Klal Amar Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Rabbi Shimon Elazar set a general rule as far as areas that you're allowed to carry in and areas that you're not allowed to carry in. Kol avir shetashmishi ledira, when you have an open space, in other words, that a space that's not roofed over, but it's used for dira, it's used on a regular basis for living space. In other words, again, as Rashi says, l'knisa l'yitziyat tamid, a person is always going in and out of it. So then, could going gear the sahar or mukta v'chatzer, for example, the various enclosures that we mentioned before, enclosures for animals, and enclosure for drying wood, a chatzer, so those, afilu beis chameshes kurim, beis aseres kurim mutter, those you're allowed to carry in no matter how large they are, even if they're 5 or 10 kurim in size, because they have proper mechitzes around them and they are used for dira. So the fact that they're not roofed over doesn't hurt anything. And vice versa, though, we had this concept in the first perek. You can have a dira, you can have a dwelling where it has a roof, but the main purpose of it is for the sake of the space around it. For example, the watchmen's huts in the field. Nobody lives in those huts because they want to live in them. They're living in them in order to be able to guard the fields outside of them. Then, based on Sayyim Mutter, Yosef, based on Sayyim Asr, then even within the Burgen in itself, you'd only be allowed to carry only if it's up to based on Sayyim in size, but not more than that. It's not so much that you have to be able to live there, it's you're living there for the sake of living there, rather than you're living there just in order, for example, to watch the field around it. We had a similar concept in the first perek, for example, about a tree where the branches of it overhang down to the ground within 3 tefachim, and you're allowed to carry under the tree up to Beis Sasayim for the same reason. It's Dira Shetashmish Al Aver. Nobody voluntarily lives under a tree. You live under there because, for example, you need to guard the field outside it or whatever. So you'd be allowed to carry under there, but only if that area under the tree is up to base, under the branches of the tree is up to base Sasayim. Same thing over here. If the Burgen in itself was built very large, more than base Sasayim, you wouldn't be able to carry in there. Yeah. So in other words, the point of Shimon Elazar wants us to realize, it doesn't matter whether it has a roof or not. What it depends on is it primarily the dira or not? In the case of the animal enclosures and whatever, they themselves count as a dira. Again, according to Rashi, because the person is always going in and out of there on a regular basis. According to other Rishonim, because a person may actually sleep in there. For example, they sleep in there to take care of the animals or whatever. But the point is that they're sleeping in there for the sake of what's inside there. They're guarding the animals that are inside there. They're guarding the wood that's inside there, whatever. So you can have a big, huge house, and you're allowed to carry it. No, because if you have a big house, once you have a big house, no, Burgen Inn is one thing. Burgen Inn are just temporary huts or whatever. Once you have a permanently built house, then, yeah. Right, so then, B'pashtus, that's Dira Shetashmish Al Atzma. I mean, B'pashtus, okay, it doesn't have interior walls, but it's still a big open space, but still, you're in there for its own sake. You're not in there necessarily for the sake of anything outside of it. So the hordo, that would be fine. Okay. Well, it's not necessarily a closed building. That's the thing. It's open to the air. It doesn't have a roof. It doesn't have a roof over it. It just has walls. So then that's fine. That's what we're saying. It has 4 complete walls, and because it's hukka fladira, you're allowed to carry in it, no matter how large it is. Same idea. In other words, if you're going regularly into it, as long as you're going regularly into it, then it counts, then it's good. No, but that's fine. According to Rashi, it's not necessary to sleep there. According to other Rishonim, it is. Yeah, right. Okay. Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im hoyse derech reshus harabim afsekasan, Rabbi Yehuda says that if reshus harabim passes through the Pasei Berois. Imagine, for example, you set up the Pasei Berois on the where they're on the ends of the Reshus Rabim. So you have the Reshus Rabim passes through, and you have the Pasim are placed into each one of them. Two of the sides of the Pasim face towards the sides of Reshus Rabim, and the same thing on the other side. So whenever people are walking in Reshus Rabim, they're going to be passing through the Pasim. But the problem is, in other words, it's one thing if the Pasim are enclosing only part of Reshus Rabim, and the Rabim can still go around them. Here we're talking about there's no way with this Derech HaRabim to go through without walking through the Pasim. So then Rabbi Yehuda says, no good, you have to reroute the Reshus Rabim around them. Because the water, you don't have to, but you have to reroute the
Reshus Rabim. Can you stop interrupting, please?
Excuse me, he's trying to understand, and so are you.
I know, but it's just interrupting all the time, and
you know what?
We need to move on, as you say.
Abraham Moshe Alexander, if you were here in person, you wouldn't consider
it. It doesn't make any difference.
He needs to understand, I need to explain.
Okay. Well, let him ask the questions after the shiur.
Okay. If question, you know very well, Avraham Moshe, that a question to understand, I always allow, and frankly, even some of your questions, which are not, I also do. So come on.
I don't ask questions. Okay. You told me many times not to, and the rule has to be the same for everybody. Please.
Okay. I'm muting you, please, so that we can continue. Okay. The point is, in other words, like this, normally you have that the like this you normally have the pasim don't extend all the way across Rosh Hashanah Abim. So you're able to go when you're walking in Rosh Hashanah Abim, you're able to walk through the pasim, but you're also able to walk around them. Now over here you have the pasim are the full width of Rosh Hashanah Abim. So anytime you're walking in Rosh Hashanah Abim, you're going to have to go through there. So Rabbi Yehuda says no good. You have to reroute the Rosh Hashanah Abim in order to make it allowed to be able to use the pasim. We're holding on the Mishnah on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. And it's sort of Chacham say it's not necessary to do that. So the point is going to be, as we learned a few days ago, and as we're going to learn in the Gemara over here, the question is whether we say Osu Rabim Mevatli Mechitzasa. Do we say that Rabim passing through the Mechitzas is Mevatl the strength of them? So the Gemara starts off. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar Da'ami Tavayu. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar both say, Kan Hoidiach HaKoichon Shal Mechitzas. Here the Chacham are telling you how powerful Mechitzas are, that even though you have Rabim walking through, they're still considered Mechitzas. So the question is, so what do you mean? You're saying that here the Tanakhama is telling you that, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan rather actually agrees with that concept. The city of Yerushalayim, which had a street going straight through it, it would be a Rosh Hashanah Abim if it weren't for the fact that the doors are locked at night. Meaning, in other words, even though you have Tzuras HaPesach on both ends, so your Shalim has walls, so you have a Pesach on each end, nevertheless, that also Rabim Mevatel Mechitzasa, the fact that Rabim are walking through there would be Mevatel and make it that those are not counted Mechitzas, the only thing that allows it to not be a Rosh Hashanah Abim is the fact that the doors are closed at night. So we see, in other words, that unless you have actual, so then it's not similar to the Midbar, because the Midbar was open by day and by night. So in other words, the point is that Rabim can be Mevatel or Mechitza. So Ella can veloy svirale. So we have to say that what Rabbi Yochanan means is that it is over here indeed that the Tanakhama is saying that, but Rabbi Yochanan doesn't agree with that. Rabbi Yochanan actually agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that Rabim are Mevatel Mechitza. Now we learned a few days ago Rabbi Elazar is not like that. Rabbi Elazar does agree with the Chachamim. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are both saying the same lashon. Can hoidiach hakoich and shamachitzes, but Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are both saying that, but Rabbi Yochanan actually agrees with that. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that concept and says that Rabim are mevatel the mechitza, like Rabbi Yehuda says, and Rabbi Elazar says that I agree with what the Tanakhama is saying, as we learned the other day. It's not Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar we're talking about over here, Rabbi Elazar the Amora. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are both using the same expression, but Rabbi Yochanan means I don't agree with it. I'm telling you what the Tanakhama says, but I don't agree with it. I agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Elazar, who was Rabbi Yochanan's Talmud, is saying that I agree with the Chachamim on this point. Which actually gets into the question of who the Halacha is like. You have a machlokes haposkim about that. You have the Rambam paskins like the Tanakhama. Rabbim are never mevatel mechitza. On the other hand, a number of Rishonim paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Especially, for example, if we're saying over here that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Elazar agrees with the Tanakhama. Up until the time of Abaye and Rava, we say that when a Rebbe and a Talmud argue, the halacha is usually like the Rebbe. So that would mean a reason to paskin like Rabbi Yochanan over here. For that and for other reasons. Anyway, okay. Fine. So Elkan v'loy svirali. So the question is, v'rami did Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda, v'rami did Rabbanon ad Rabbanon. Now, so you're telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda does not allow if Rabbim are walking in between the mechitzas. He says then the mechitzas are no good. And that Rabbanon are saying it still is good. We have a contradiction then between this and another statement of Rabbi Yehuda, and between this and another statement of the Chachamim. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, yes, that Arkein Omer Rabbi Yehuda. Beyond that, Rabbi Yehuda says, and we've learned this before, that Rabbi Yehuda first talks about a case where you have a bridge passing over Rosh Hashanah Abim, where he says you're allowed to carry under that bridge because you have two walls on the two sides and Pitzuk Yod Vesosim in the middle. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, beyond that, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Misha Hayla Shnei Batim, the Shnei Tzidi Rishos Rabim, a person who has two houses, one on each side of Rishos Rabim, Oisle Lechem Yikan, Velechem Yikan, he puts up a lechi, a vertical pole at each end of one of the houses, so now it's like a mavui, and he's allowed to carry in there, Oy Koda Mikan, Vekoda Mikan, he puts a Koda, a horizontal beam on one, on each side, Venosim, Venosim, Bamsa, and then he's allowed to carry in the middle, even though it's Rosh Hashanah, because now he's made it, now you have two mechitzas plus the lechi and the koda, or the lechi with the koda on each side. Amru loy ein ma'avin Rosh Hashanah makach, and the Chum say you can't make an Eruv in Rosh Hashanah that way. So what do we see from that? Rabbi Yehuda has no problem with the Rabbim still continuing to walk through Rosh Hashanah. The mechitzas are still valid, whereas the Chum are saying that not. That's exactly the opposite of what they're saying, respectively, in our Mishnah. The answer is, the question is, Kasha did Rabbi Yehuda, did Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha did Rabbanan, did Rabbanan. So the answer is, did Rabbi Yehuda like Kasha? There's no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. Hasam de'ikas shtei mechitzas mal yasa, hachal lekas shtei mechitzas mal yasa. Because over there, you have two full walls. You have the walls of the houses on both sides. Those are full-fledged walls. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, once you have two walls, then it's not a real Rosh Hashanah anymore. Therefore, you can put up a lechi or a korah on each side, and you're good, and you have an area where you can carry. Here you don't have two complete walls because on each side all you have is passing. All you have is a passing. So Rabbi Yehuda is, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that you're walking that the people walking through there is that the people walking through there is going to consider that it's not mechitzas anymore. What passing and diyum, they're not the same thing yet. What it is the word pass means a board, like we said the other day. So pass is the generic term for a wide strip that you have standing up in an area, whereas diumdin are specifically these L-shaped ones that you have by a boria. By the Rabbanan, there's also no contradiction one to the other. Here you actually have at least the semblance of four walls, because you have the fact that you have a pass here, a pass here, or whatever. At least from any side that you look, it looks like you have a wall over there. Okay, it's got a large gap in between, but at least you have something that resembles a wall. Over there, you don't really have that. You only have a lechi or a koda on each side. Even the lechi, in other words, it's one thing if you're going to say you have a pass that has a certain width to it, then fine, that can be considered of semblance of a mechitza. But when you just have a very narrow lechi, a lechi we learned in the first parak has no minimum width, so you can't really consider that. Even if you say lechi mishum mechitza, still the chachamim are going to say that the rabbim going through it makes it no good. That's what Rabbi Yehuda had said, because you have two solid walls, but the Chum disagree with that concept. In fact, we have the machlokas anyway. We've mentioned it back in the first parak. Tosis refers to it over here. Do you need two mechitzas to make a place of Rosh Hashanah Yachid Daraisa, or three? If you say you need at least three, then here you don't have three. You have only two. A sukkah as a whole is a different case, but here we're talking about. Okay, fine. Amr Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef Amr Rabbi Yechanan. Eretz Yisrael ein chayav an aleihem mishum Rosh Hashanah Rabim. In Eretz Yisrael, you're not chayav for carrying, there's no Rosh Hashanah Rabim in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what does he mean by that? What does he mean by that? We have to figure out. Yosef Rav Dimi v'ka'amal ala hashmaita. Rav Dimi was sitting and saying over the statement of Rabbi Yechanan. Amalei Abaye Lerav Dimi, my timer. Why would that be? What's different about Eretz Yisrael? Ilema mishum makif lasuma detzurme hach gisa. Is it because Eretz Yisrael has, on one side of it, you have Sulma de Tzur, which is a very high ridge of mountains on the north side of Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, we have part of Sulma de Tzur is basically more or less the border nowadays between Israel and Lebanon. In particular, you have an area over there next to the Mediterranean called Rosh HaNikra. You have a high cliff that you have go over there. So are we saying that, therefore, that that's considered like a wall around that part of Eretz Yisrael? And then you have the descent, a deep valley of Geder on the other side. So therefore, in effect, Eretz Yisrael has walls around part of it. And the Ritva explains, what we mean over here is those two things actually meet in an L shape. When you get, in other words, if they were parallel to each other, if you had one here and one here, then fine, that only according to Rabbi Yehuda would that be good, not according to the Chum. But here they meet in an L shape. You have the mountains run to the north of Eretz Yisrael. This valley of Geder runs to the east of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, even the Chachamim might agree that way makes it not a full Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, so it meets like that at the corner. So, uh, So therefore, it would mean that you can. Therefore, it would mean there's no true Rosh Hashanah Min Eretz Yisrael. If you're going to say that, Bavel Nami, then you could say the same thing is true of Bavel. Makif La Pras Mehach Gisa with Diglas Mehach Gisa. One side of Bavel, you have the Pras River. The other side of it, you have the Chidekel River. And in fact, Pras is the Euphrates, Chidekel is the Tigris. Whatever, you look on a map, it'll be whack. You've got the Pras, the Euphrates River running along the west side of Iraq, or in west central Iraq or whatever, and it goes eventually into the Persian Gulf. The Chidekel is further east, and it does the same thing. The point is also, there you also have, they meet at one point. They meet before they go into the Persian Gulf. You have the same kind of thing. They meet in a corner. So if you're going to say it like that, it would mean there's no Rosh Hashanah in Bavel either. So why are we talking specifically about Eretz Yisrael? And in fact, you could ask even further, the Kula Alma Nami Makif Okeanos. In fact, the whole world, there should be no Rosh Hashanah in the whole world. Every continent is surrounded by ocean. And eventually you have, okay, the drop off, at first when you go to the beach and you go to the ocean, it doesn't drop off that much, but eventually it drops off very sharply to the sea floor. So then you could say anywhere in the world is not going to be a Rosh Hashanah. If the Sechta ended here, yeah. Dilma Milus Umodus Kamrit. Maybe you're talking specifically about the elevations and the goings down in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, we're not talking about Eretz Yisrael as a whole. What we mean is, in Eretz Yisrael, when you have a very steep hill or going up or a very steep valley going down, then we would say that's not considered a Rosh Hashanah because the Rabbim can't use it that easily. Now, in that case, that wouldn't necessarily, on the face of it, then it wouldn't necessarily apply specifically to Eretz Yisrael. Then it could apply more generally in the world. So we'll see at the end of the sugya, we'll see there's a reason to say specifically in Eretz Yisrael. So we're not talking Eretz Yisrael as a whole. We're talking about these steep ascents and descents that those would not be considered a chesed adam. By the way, though, you do get into the question over here, why taka do we not say, why indeed do we not say that these valleys and mountains and whatever, and or the drop off to the seabed or whatever, taka, why don't they count as mechitzas? Why taka don't we say that any continent, for example, you'd be allowed to carry in on a Zaraisa level? No, but a Beis Hashanah is only a concept of Rabbanan. We're talking about a Daraisa level. On a Daraisa level, no place should be a Rosh Hashanah on the basis of this. So there's a couple of considerations. Tosfos mentions over here that when you have, it's one thing when you have a mechitza that was made by people, then we can talk about whether Rabbim are mevatel or not. Natural mechitzas, yes, Rabbim going through them are going to be mevatel them. All these natural mechitzas that you have around Eretz Yisrael or around the continents or whatever, yes, you have people are going on them all the time, therefore it doesn't count as mechitzas. Well, not necessarily 600,000 every day, but in other words, you have enough people are going through them that they're not counted as mechitzas. A number of Rishonim, the Ritva, and a number of Rishonim give a different reason. It can only be considered mechitzis if you're able to realize that you're within mechitzis. If you're standing on the ground there and you can't even see the mechitzis on both sides of you because they're too far away, then you can't count it that those are mechitzis. It's interesting. In Igros Kodesh, there's a letter from the Rebbe to somebody who had written a kunteris about the possibilities of Tikkun Eruvin. The guy was discussing the question, for example, would it be possible to make an Eruv in Manhattan? In those days, Moshe Feinstein, for example, was talking about it. You have several things in Igros Moshe where he... he describes how you can't do it because of various considerations. So this guy had written a kunteris on the subject and sent it to the Rebbe. And one thing he was arguing is maybe you should consider, based on this idea, look, if you stand on top of one of the skyscrapers in Manhattan, you could see the East River and you could see the Hudson. So there you go. You can see you inside Mechitzis. So it should fit the criteria of a Kaimelis according to the Ritual's definition. And the Rebbe told him, come on, you can't say that a tall building like that is going to turn a place from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah Yachid. I mean, the Rebbe says, in that case, what do you have? You know, it says that Shlomo HaMelech flew up over the earth and, you know, like a magic carpet or something, and he was able to see the earth and the, are you going to say therefore that the whole, you're going to be back to the whole world is not going to be a Rosh Hashanah again because you can go high enough to see a spaceship or whatever. Yeah. So therefore, nothing doing. The fact that there's a tall building, the fact that there's a skyscraper in the middle of Manhattan doesn't help you anything. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, getting back to the Gemara. So again, so Abaye is asking that maybe we don't mean, maybe Rabbi Yochanan did not mean that all of Eretz Yisrael you'd be possible from carrying it on Daraisa level, because not Rosh Hashanah. Specifically, the high elevations and then the goings up and the goings down in Eretz Yisrael, those would be the ones that you'd be that we're saying are not Rosh Hashanah. Amale, so Rabbi was very impressed. He says Karkafna. Karkafna literally means the one with the head, and it's the chosh of a person. Chazise l'reishach be'amudi. I saw your head among the pillars in the Beis Medrash. So either that means, so Rav Dimi, sorry, is telling Abaye. So Rav Dimi is complimenting Abaye. Rapashas Abaye is younger. So either he's telling, no, Rapashas Abaye is younger than Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi learned by Rabbi Yechanan. Rav Dimi learned by Rabbi Yechanan. No. Yeah, Rapashas, yeah. The point is, in other words, that So one explanation is he means it's as if you were there. You gave such a good answer to explain what Rabbi Yochanan means as if you were actually there in the Beis Medrash. Tosfos gives a different explanation that it means like this: Reishach, which means your head, means also your Rebbe. Rabba, who was Abaye's Rebbe, learned by Rabbi Yochanan at the end of Rabbi Yochanan's life. Rabba was a young man when Rabbi Yochanan passed away, but he had the opportunity to go and learn Torah by Rabbi Yochanan. So Rav Dimi is saying to Abaye, you know how did you manage to hit on such an explanation? It must be that your Rebbe, Rabba, learned this when he was learning by Rabbi Yochanan that short time, and he told that to you. But in other words, what you're saying is absolutely correct. I saw your head among the pillars when Rabbi Yochanan said this statement. Itmar, Nami, in fact, we said also, Ki also Ravin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Va'amila Amar Rabbahu Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Milus Umordus Shiva Eretz Yisrael, and Chayavan Alein Mashem Mashasabim. These places where you go up, the steep ascents and the steep descents in Eretz Yisrael, you're not Chayav on them for Rosh Hashanah, even if otherwise they meet all the criteria of Rosh Hashanah, Lefisha En Kedigle Midbar, because it's not like the way it was in the encampment in the Midbar where it was flat. Now, in fact, then the Midbar is not naturally flat either, but we know famously that she says the Anani HaKavod would smooth out the path for them, so therefore it really was smooth, and therefore when you have a place like this where you have these steep ups and downs, and it's not similar to that. Maybe Pashas, after they left, it went back to the way it was. Okay. Bomene Rachva Medrova. Tell him a slaket asar mitoch arba. If you have a very steep mound of dirt or small hill or something, whereas we said before, you have that it's so steep that in a horizontal distance of 4 amas, you've gone at least 10 tefachim up. So like I said yesterday, a grade of 45% or whatever, about a 25-degree angle or so. The rabbim breaking by, but you also have rabbim walk over it all the time. Chayavin alav mishum mashur sadam mayen chayavin alav, or you chayav for it for shur sadam or not. Now Tosfos says he didn't hear what Rabbi Yochanan had said. Rabbi Yochanan had said that only in Eretz Yisrael would it be false, implying in Chutz La'aretz you'd still be chayav for it. He hadn't heard that statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Again, why it's dafka to Eretz Yisrael? We're going to get to only at the end of the sugya, but anyway. So would you be chayav or not? I'll live it to Rabbanan Loti Boilach. Now he continues. If you're going according to the Chachamim, then there's no question. Hashto ma hasam the nichat hashmishdei. Madoch, in the case of our Mishnah, where you're walking in Rosh Hashanah through the Pass of Eros, it's very easy to walk through. Amir Rabbanan loy osu Rabbim mavatil lamachitzasa. And still the Chachamim say that Rabbim are not mavatil lamachitzasa. Hachad le nichat hashmishdei. Here you're talking about a mound of dirt or a small hill or whatever, where it's difficult because it's such a steep slope, so it's difficult to go. Loy koshkan, how much more so that it should not be mavatil lamachitzasa. So therefore, it would be considered a mechitza, and therefore it wouldn't be considered a shasar hamim. So according to the Chachamim, there's no question. The question would be, according to Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, that also Rabbim Mavatli Mechitzasa, so now the question is like this. So what's it in? You could say only in the case of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda saying it's no good because it's very easy to walk through. Because it's a flat street, so he would say that the Rabbim Mavatel Hachol who deloy nichat hashmishdei. Here it's not that easy because it's a steep slope. Loy also Rabbim Mavatel mechitzasa. Maybe the Rabbim are not Mavatel mechitza. I do maloshna, or maybe there's no difference. Amalei. So Rava answers him. Chayovin. Yes, you'd be chayev for, you'd be if such a thing as a Rosh Hashanah Avim, you'd be chayev for carrying in it. He says, even though it's a steep slope, nevertheless, because the Rabbim go on it, it's still considered a Rosh Hashanah Avim. So he asks, what about if it's even steeper than that? So steep that when you're walking up, you have to hold on to a rope that's placed at the side of it in order, otherwise you're going to slip down. So that's for sure, you would think is very loy nicha tashmishte, it's very difficult to use. Amalei loishna, he says, amalei ein. So he says, yes. He asked him about Philip Milos base Meron. Would that apply even to the slope of the place of Meron, which is very, very steep? Rashi brings over here from the Gemara, which is appropriate now because we're coming to Rosh Hashanah, that you have when the Mishnah says Kol Boy Olam over in the front of Kivnei Moron, the Gemara mentions over there one possibility is Moron is Meron, which means in other words there's a very steep slope over there where people have to walk single file. So the same way, in other words, Hashem judges a single file on Rosh Hashanah. So even there, where people have to walk single file, would that still be considered Rosh Hashanah Avim? Amalei ain't. So he says, yes, even that would still be considered Rosh Hashanah Avim. Eisve, so now Rachva says to Rava, so you're telling me no matter how difficult it is to climb up, as long as the Rabbim do it, you can consider it a Rosh Hashanah Yachid, you consider it still a Rosh Hashanah Avim. Eisve says, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Masech Tataris, a chotzer where many people go in through one end and go out through the other end. So either, in other words, there's actual doorways in the chotzer, or there are pirtzes, there are breaches in the walls up to 10 amos wide. The din is Rosh Hashanah Rabim L'Truma or Rosh Hashanah Yachad L'Shabbos. It's considered Rosh Hashanah Rabim as far as the din of Truma V'Tahara, meaning that if there's Safek Tuma in there, then you'll be Tahar, but it's considered Rosh Hashanah Yachad as far as Shabbos, that you can still carry in there. So, Mani, now who would that be like? Ilema Rabbanon, would it be according to the Rabbanon? What's the Chiddush? Hosam Uma Hosam the Nichatash Mishneh, Madoch again in our Mishnah, where it's very easy to walk between the Pasiv Erois, because they span the full width of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and Am Rabbanon Loy Osir Rabbim Mavati Mechitzos, and still the Chacham said that Am not Mavati Mechitzos, Hachad Loy Nichatash Mishneh, here it's not as easy to, because these entrances in and out of the chotzer are not necessarily that wide. They may even have, if we're talking about the part of the wall of the chotzer broke down, then you're going to have little bricks and things sticking out from the ends, so it's not so easy to walk through without your clothes getting snagged on it. So loy kol shekin, how much more so than the chachamim would consider that still a Rosh Hashanah Yachid? Ela lav Rabbi Yehuda. On the face of it, then, this brice has to be according to Rabbi Yehuda. And we see, therefore, that even though the Rabbim are going through, where it's not Nicha Tashmishte, where it's not so easy to go through, Rabbi Yehuda would still allow it to be Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So then in that case, what are you telling me that even if you have to hold on to a rope when you're climbing up, you don't have to go single file, etc.? The answer is Loi, Lo'olam Rabbanon. No, actually, we can say that Mishnah is according to the Rabbanon. And you're right, there's not really a Chiddush in the fact that it's a Rosh Hashanah Yachid B'Shabbos, or Rosh Hashanah Rabbim L'Tumah Etzrichalei. The Chiddush is rather the fact that we say that it's a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim L'Tumah, which we wouldn't have known otherwise, that this that we say, that because Rabbim are walking through it, even though it's hard to, that it's considered Rosh Hashanah Rabbim L'Tumah, we wouldn't have known that without this Mishnah. So the whole reason we're saying is in order to tell us it's Rosh Hashanah Rabbim L'Tumah, right? Toshma. Another Mishnah says, Mavoyas ham fuloshes beboris over shichen of a ma'aris, Mavoyas that are a mavoy that is open up to a bor shiach ha'mayra. Bor shiach ha'mayra are various kinds of pits for water. A bor is round, a shiach is square or rectangular. A ma'ara has a cover over the top of it. Anyway, so you have a mavoy where one end of it opens to one of those things. So here's an illustration. So you have the mavoi, one end of the mavoi is taken up by a bur. So people are still able to walk by the sides of the bur, or Tosfos says maybe even on the bur itself, because the bur itself is not necessarily that deep. No, because it's not necessarily that deep. If it's less than 10 tefachim deep, then people can walk through it as well. Yeah, but no, that's what I'm saying. So people will go down, people will step down from the mavoi into it and walk across, and then step back up on the other side. Anyway, the point is, That we, but let's focus on the fact that they can walk on the sides of this Boruch Yachamira. So again, so the Mishnah says over there, Rishus Yachad LaShabbos, Rishus Adam LaTumah. So they're considered Rishus Yachad as far as Shabbos, or Rishus Adam as far as Tumah. So first of all, we have to figure out the Loshen of the Mishnah. What do you mean, Bab Boruch Sakad Adach? The expression in the Mishnah is Mavoris Am Falashim. In a pit or in a shiach or in a mira, what do you mean? You don't have a mavi inside a pit or whatever. El liboris, it means that it's open to, it opens up to a bor or whatever. So we're saying, Rosh Hashiach at the Shabbos, Rosh Hashiach at the Shabbos. So again, we can ask Mani, who would that be like? Ilemer Rabbanon, would that be like the Rabbanon of our Mishnah? Again, there's no chiddush in it. Hashto mahasim the nichat hashmish de amri loy also rabbim mabatila. In our Mishnah, where it's very easy to walk through, and still the Chachamim say that it's okay, and the Rabbim are not mabatil the mechitzis, hachad loy nichat hashmish de. Here it's very hard, because you only have a small space between, you only have a small space between the edge of the burr and the walls of the mavur. Now, by the way, if you had less than three tvachim, then there's nothing to talk about. Then the burr itself would be a mechitza, and you'd have, actually, then for sure it would be a rishus yachid. We're talking about there's more than three tvachim, so it's not lavud, but still, it's not that easy to get by. So loy kol shekin, how much more so that it would not be mevatel, el alav Rabbi Yehuda. Evidently, it has to be according to Rabbi Yehuda. So again, we see that even Rabbi Yehuda is saying where it's loy nicha tashmishte is not mevatel the mechitza, and therefore it's considered a Rosh Hashanah Yachid as far as Shabbos. So the same thing should apply, again, as far as the very steep hills, yeah. So the answer is no. No, we are actually talking according to the Rabbanon. And again, Rosh Hashanah L'Tumah, it's Rechala. Again, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is more about the part that it's Rosh Hashanah L'Tumah. Toshma, Shvilei Beis Gilgul v'chayotz behen, the paths of Beis Gilgul, which is a very steep place in Eretz Yisrael, v'chayotz behen, and similar kind of things. Some of them, of course, say that Gilgul literally means rolling, because it's like a path that's so steep it can't go straight up the mountain, it has to go like round and round. Anyway, Rosh Hashanah Yachad b'Shabbos Rosh Hashanah L'Tumah, ve'ezehu shvilei beis gilgul, how steep are shvilei beis gilgul, that we're saying that they're counted as a Rosh Hashanah Yachad as far as Shabbos, ami dvei Rabbi Yanai, they said in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, kol she'ena eved yochel little sasho chitin, v'yoretz l'fei sariyah. If it's so steep, that if an eved is carrying a saw of wheat, and a sariyah, a soldier, a Roman soldier, or whatever, his officer, is nudging him, he has to go fast, or he's going to beat him or whatever, he still can't run, because physically impossible because it's so steep. So again, now the question is, again, who would that be like? Mani, Ilemi Rabbanon. It can't be like the Rabbanon. Hashta, again, Umahasam, the Nichat, the Shmishte, Omer Rabbanon, Le'osi Rabbanon, Mavatel, the Mechitza. In our Mishnah, they're saying the Rabbanon are not Mavatel, the Mechitza. Hasam, Le'nichat, the Shmishte, Le'koshkin. How much more so there? We were saying it's so steep that even an Ebed, where somebody is nudging him and beating him to go faster, he still physically can't go faster. Obviously, they would agree that the Rambam are not Mavatal such a Mechitza. El Olav Rabbi Yehuda. Again, it must be like Rabbi Yehuda. So even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that's not considered Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So why are you telling me it's considered Rosh Hashanah Rabbin? Amalei, so Rava answers him, Shvilei Beis Gilgul, Kamer. You're talking about a special situation about Shvilei Beis Gilgul, which are in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we learned before, Rabbi Yechanan said that in Eretz Yisrael, there's a difference. We didn't explain all this time what's the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. Now we're going to explain the difference. Yeshua oyev Yisrael haya. Yeshua loved the Jewish people. So he was always looking out when he's doing things in Eretz Yisrael to do the best possible way. Omed v'tikalem drachem usratya. So part of when Yeshua divided up Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, he set up roads and main highways all over Eretz Yisrael, that they should have ways to get from point A to point B. So the rule he did like this was, kol heichad nichat hashmishte, wherever it's easy enough to use, it's not that steep, and therefore it's easy enough to go up and down, masr l'rabim, he gave it to the rabim. So therefore, those areas are rishos rabim. Kol heichad nichat hashmishte, if it's the kind of thing, like the shvilei beis gilgul, which are very steep, and it's very difficult for the rabim to go over, masr l'yachid, he gave it to the yachid, and the yachid, now it's still a road that people can use, but it belongs to a yachid, and he, for example, now has the right to block it off or whatever if he wants. So that's why Shvilei Beis Gilgul, because they're in Eretz Yisrael, they have a special rule, which explains what Rabbi Yechanan was saying before about Eretz Yisrael specifically. Same idea. But in Chutz Laaretz, where you don't have that, Yeshua didn't divide up Chutz Laaretz. Therefore, you go back to the usual rule that loy also according to Rabbi Yehuda also Rabbim will vatel mechitza. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbim will be vatel mechitza, and according to the Chachamim not. So that's the difference between Eretz Yisrael. That's the difference between Eretz Yisrael and everywhere else. We did one quick thing in that connection is we talked about a week or two ago some various considerations that come into the question of whether you're allowed to put up Eruvin in a city. We have the question, is it Rosh Hashanah Abim or is it Tamalist? Do you have 600,000, et cetera? One interesting consideration is that some of the posts Machronim talk about, since nowadays there's no, they have traffic lights, for example, like Eastern Parkway has traffic lights, even interstate highways or whatever, you know, they have, the government can block them off if necessary. So therefore they might be considered like a Derech HaYochid, like we're saying over here in the Gemara. They belong in a certain sense to the Yochid. They belong to the local government who has the right to close it or block it off or tell you to stop at a red light or whatever when they want, and therefore maybe that would be a reason that they're not considered a true Rosh Hashanah Abim, which would mean therefore that you would be able to make an Eruv around them. And that's one consideration that comes in this. Yeah. Okay. Shkayach, everyone.